This is the World War II Radio Podcast.
A date which will live in infamy.
This is London.
We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
Go ahead, Berlin. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Welcome to the World War II Radio Podcast. The goal of this podcast is to present the original radio broadcast from 80 years ago during the days of the war, with the occasional more recent radio program about the war. Today, we have the March 24th, 1944 edition of the NBC News of the World, with reports on the potential invasion of India by Japanese forces, along with updates from London, Cairo, New York, and Washington. The World War II Radio Podcast is a Brick Pickle Media production. If you like the show, please leave feedback on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Be sure to visit our website at brickpicklemedia.com/podcast, where you can find links to past episodes and other information. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/WW2Radio. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy today's episode of the World War II Radio Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Good evening, everyone. This is W.W. Chaplin speaking for Alka-Seltzer and bringing you the news of the world with direct reports from overseas. I'm substituting once more for John W. Vandercook. Our Navy men from beneath the sea and above it have good tales to tell of progress in the Pacific. Our subs in Japanese waters have sunk 11 more enemy ships. Our airmen have bombed a new objective on the ocean road to Truk, Ant-Island Atoll, near Ponape. Farther west, Jap invasion forces in India are augmented. Stories of concern and criticism come from China. In Europe, new bombing of Germany, new successes in Russia. And now, a word from Charles Lyon.
Friends, do you feel mean and miserable with a touch of acid indigestion? Well, be wise. Alkalize with Alka-Seltzer. Now, here's how you do it. Drop an Alka-Seltzer tablet or two into a glass of water, like this. Now, listen to it fizz. Then, drink it. You see, Alka-Seltzer can be just the thing for occasional acid indigestion because it not only offers prompt relief for that upset, jittery feeling in the stomach, but it also actually helps reduce excess gastric acidity. Keep a supply of Alka-Seltzer handy always. When your supply runs low, get another 30 or 60 cent size package at any drugstore. And now back to W.W. Chaplin.
News comes today from Delhi that now a third Japanese invasion force is believed to have penetrated from Burma into India. But even despite that, the only concern so far expressed is voiced not by the British, who own most of India and supervise the rest, not by the Americans, who have great stake there in material and men. The only cries of alarm are raised in China, traditional land of wisdom. The first Jap columns, you remember, came over the hills straight west from Burma. And to judge from accounts received here, drove to within 30 miles of the Manipur state capital of Imphal before it was even discovered that the border had been crossed. Then yesterday, we were told another enemy column had jog-trotted 60 miles into India from further south in Burma. That force also got to within 30 miles of Imphal before being detected, or at least in any way impeded. And now, with as great seeming unconcern as has been evinced from the Indian side throughout, it is acknowledged that a third Jap invasion task force is believed to be assembling in the jungles northeast of Imphal. So now, the Japs have a trident thrust across those frontier hills into India, its perilous prongs pointed at Imphal from the southeast the east, and the northeast. Imphal is a junction for roads cobwebbing the whole of India. Enemy control of Imphal would threaten control of all Assam. And Assam is the Allied loading platform for supplies to China. Seemingly inspired dispatches from Delhi minimize the chances of Jap progress because of supply difficulties. One lesson of Singapore, Malaya, Burma itself, was that Jap soldiers carry no equipment except their weapons and eat off the land. The Chinese, at least, did not miss that lesson. From Chongqing come stories of the shock felt there now. The Chinese journal Ta Kung Pao says if the Allies had been more aggressive in the Far East, there would be no time for Tojo to take any interest in India. And now we skip across the Atlantic to John McVane, who reports on the latest news of England. Go ahead, John.
This is John McVane in London. At the moment, we're having an air raid here. Last night at this time, I broadcast from a London rooftop during a German raid. Today, the official German news agency, DNB, sent an account of that broadcast to the entire German press with the headline, John McVane fails to broadcast London raid noises. Dr. Goebbels' news bureau ended by saying that I mentioned noise in the distance, noise growing louder. Saying this, added DNB, McVane interrupted his commentary and disappeared. I mention this tonight to remind the Germans that I've seen several hundred Luftwaffe raids. No noise was broadcast last night because there wasn't any. Raiders didn't come near enough for NBC listeners to hear. Far from disappearing from the roof, I talked business with the New York NBC newsroom and then went home to bed. The Marauders were out again today. Those sleek, fast American medium bombers are out most days, striking at all Germany's western outposts from the English Channel to the German border. Most famous of the Marauders is Mild and Bitter. In Britain, that's a glass of beer, a mixture of mild ale and bitter beer. To the American 9th Air Force, it's the Marauder that's been over Europe the greatest number of times on 75 missions and always gone on to bomb its target. Tonight, I've brought two members of Mild and Bitter's crew, Captain Paul Shannon of Attica, Kansas, the pilot, and Staff Sergeant Paul Jordan of Anderson, Indiana, the tail gunner, to tell you about the plane. They're as fond of it as a man is fond of a trusted friend or a dog or a horse.
That's right. It's like an old racehorse, a good winning horse who's ready to retire. Our crew's been with us for more than half its missions, and we think of it as our plane.
Is it better than other Marauders?
We think so. We got pretty sore about it. When other crews start to say it's no good, we defend it.
You know, when you buy a car of the same make, you get a good car or a bad car. Mild and Bitter's a good car. She's never been hit by fighters. Other bombers in our flight have been hit or shot down, but never Mild and Bitter. Other planes come back full of flak holes and have to be passed. Mild and Bitter may lose a stabilizer or an aileron. When she comes back, a new one is put on, and she doesn't show any sign of damage.
But she's getting old now. We're always nervous when our crews take her up. We'd hate to hear if she'd fallen on a continent or cracked up landing because some little part had just worn out at last.
I see you both won the Distinguished Flying Cross with Mild and Bitter. What's she done? Got any statistics?
We burned up 55,000 gallons of gas in her and dropped 135 tons of bombs on German targets in Europe.
And there was a 6 minutes of heavy flak at St. Omer that the captain got us out of.
But usually she darts in and out of flak. Over Cherbourg, the flak was so heavy we could see it 10 minutes ahead of time. She went through it, bombed, and got out, and it didn't take her very long.
But perhaps 75 missions have won her a rest, as you said. And it might be a good idea to send her back for people at home to see what a thoroughbred bomber looks like. Thank you both. We send you now to NBC in Cairo.
This is Trapp, Paul speaking from Cairo, Egypt. Since it's now past midnight here, it's already Greek Independence Day, a day which the Hellenes are going to celebrate despite the present plight of their country. The anniversary finds the Greek guerrilla factions cooperating under the recent truce. But at the same time, there's a widening gap between the Greeks in the Greek mountains and the Greeks in exile. When Zervas, leader of the democratic Edis guerrillas, signed the pact with the left-wing Elis army, he severed connections with Middle Roader groups in Athens. Both Zervas and Elis felt that some of the Athens people had collaborated. Though he probably didn't intend to, Zervis thus moved a step away from the Middle Roads policy supported not only in Athens, but in Cairo. Meanwhile, Alas leaders are said to have made another appeal for more liberal representation in the Cairo government. When this was not forthcoming, they established a committee of their own, which is, in many respects, a cabinet. Soon we may have the partisans of Greece on much the same lines as the partisans of Yugoslavia. Greek Democrats are criticized in some quarters for not having joined the left-wing Alas group, thus making it more moderate. There's indication that moderate Yugoslavs have influenced partisan opinion there. A Roman Catholic priest and graduate of the Sorbonne, who occupies an important post in the partisan organization, told me that the Yugoslav movement is primarily a campaign for national liberation, includes the program of social and economic reform, but is not communistic. The priest, Professor Andrei Vite Mahipic, came to Cairo in his official capacity as cultural relations chief in the partisan mission to Bari. Professor Mahipic said the partisan leader Tito believes in the, quote, sacred right of private property, unquote. Although the partisan army commandeers material needed for making war, it bans looting or any attempt to redistribute wealth for political reasons. In our ranks, said the partisan committee man, we have communists, socialists, and Democrats. So long as men serve the common cause, we let them keep their views. Father Mahipchit sees nothing anti-religious in the partisan movement, and says that on the rare occasions when priests have been detained or punished by the partisans, they were dealt with because they had collaborated with the enemy and not because they were priests. He insisted, however, that in the region he comes from, nearly all the priests are cooperating actively or passively with the partisans. In occupied territory, many Catholic clerics act as observers for Tito and aid members of the underground movement. I switch you now to the NBC Newsroom in Washington.
This is Morgan Beatty in our nation's capital. President Roosevelt held his press radio conference today, even though his spring head cold is still pretty bad. But he had quite a bit to offer, as he put it, on American foreign policy. He read the first paragraph of a statement asking all people of Europe and Asia to hide refugees from Nazi persecutors. He said, "The United Nations are fighting to make a world in which tyranny and aggression cannot exist. A world based on freedom, equality, and justice. A world in which all persons, regardless of race, color, or creed, may live in peace, honor, and dignity." That is a very good answer to some people who are wandering around, he said, asking bellhops whether we have a foreign policy. Secretary Hull also met Republicans who are pressing for a specific expression of foreign policy. After the meeting, the visitors reported Mr. Hull took a blueprint for post-war Germany to Moscow, but it was turned down. They thought, however, that the air had been cleared a bit. That is, all except Claire Booth Luce, who said, "Silence is still the American foreign policy." On the domestic news front, Vice President Wallace tried and failed to rescue New Deal TVA from an angry Senate, but the lawmakers voted to strip TVA of its financial independence. They also voted to kill any bureau that is not authorized specifically by Congress. The Senate passed the so-called GI Soldier Bill of Rights, 49-0. Congress, incidentally, will recess between March the 29th and April the 12th. And WPB, the War Manpower Commission, and the Armed Services agreed today to create a sort of super draft board to consider the deferment of young men vital to railways, logging, coal mining, and other war industries, as well as must munitions. The CIO opened its drive to break the little steel wage stabilizer with the claim that labor gets unequal treatment. On the farm front, the president said less than 2% of our farm machinery had been lend-leased. And Lowell Mallette quit today as confidential advisor to the White House. He quit to write a column for the Washington Star and other newspapers. And that's what happened in Washington today.
8 different vitamins in one low-cost capsule. That's the new one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsule, friends, developed by the Miles Laboratories for your general vitamin protection. You know, a vitamin deficiency can lower your normal resistance to colds, can make you feel dull and dragged out or nervous and irritable. So guard against a general vitamin deficiency by taking a single one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsule every day.
Take the capsule with your breakfast, and then forget about all your vitamins for the rest of the day. That's the kind of vitamin protection everyone ought to have, and it's yours with one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules for only 3 1/3 cents a day in the large package. One-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules are of guaranteed potency, laboratory tested for purity. So get one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules and start taking them. Take only one capsule each day. Two different size packages, 24 for a dollar, 60 for $2. Ask your druggist for one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules, developed by Miles Laboratories. Look for the big one on the blue package. Now back to the NBC newsroom.
The latest great Russian drive has carried Red soldiers to a Dniester town called Zalesz-Chiki. That's in the southeastern tip of Poland, only 5 miles from the northeastern tip of Romania. It's a new threat to the Balkans, already besieged by both foe and friend, if there is any country left that can call Germany friend. It's a new threat, but not as immediate a threat as the brief Miles concerned suggests. Ahead of the Russians now lie the wild Carpathian Mountains. A detour seems indicated, and that's the news of the world. This is W.W. Chaplin speaking for Alka-Seltzer. Until tomorrow at this same time, goodbye from the newsroom in New York.
Remember this, friends. Your druggist carries 3 different kinds of one-a-day brand vitamins. Each kind is made for a different purpose. Each comes in a different colored package. The one-a-day 8-in-1 multiple vitamin capsules come in the blue package, the B-complex in the gray package, and the A and D vitamins in the yellow package. Always insist on one-a-day brand vitamins. Finest quality, potency guaranteed, low in cost. Developed by Miles Laboratories. Look for the big one on every package. Listen to the Alka-Seltzer News of the World program again Sunday evening, 11:15 Eastern Wartime. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode of the World War II Radio Podcast. We hope these old-time radio programs entertain and help you learn more about what Americans experienced during the war 80 years ago. Be sure to visit brickpicklemedia.com/podcast for past episodes and more information